This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from the office of Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome, East Baton Rouge Parish, and our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Thanks to Whitney Van, who did a nice job yesterday in her first foray as a guest host, and hopefully we'll have her back. And it was nice to hear from the Attorney General as well, Liz Merle. And today we're visiting with a general of a different kind. It was 7 years ago this week that we returned to WRKF after a couple of year hiatus. Someone reminded me the other day that it was really only a year because we were doing Ask the Governor a year after I'd left. But I don't count that as a daily show, and nor should I. So really, it was about a 2 year hiatus. And we're now at year 7 on the return, and we were on the air with the Jim Inkster Show for 11 years, so that's about 18 years of sharing the microphone with the most enlightened audience in radio. And our first guest was General Russell Honoré in 2017 when we returned, and he is back. And this is a big day for birthdays. Nancy Pelosi is 84 years old today, as is Baton Rouge's own Elizabeth Dent, and the late actor James Caan, who played Sonny Corleone in The Godfather, and Brian Piccolo in Brian's Song. He would have been 84 years old. And General Honoré, I'm sure somebody I know her well. I grew up, I'm a few years behind you, but 18 number ones for Diane Ernestine Ross, born on this date in 1944 in Detroit. She is 80 years old today. General, I suspect she was a big part of your youth as she was mine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just get the floor moving. Shake the room down. And let the lights come on. Yes, indeed. Inspiration. Real class entertainer.
Well, she grew up in the Brewster Housing Projects in Detroit. And within a few years, the Supremes captured the world by storm. And to put 18 number ones, 11 with the Supremes, 7 as a solo artist, put that in perspective, the great Bruce Springsteen never had a number one. Diana Ross, 18 of them. And Robin Dow, who was born in 1998, so Diana Ross was 54 when she was born. She's wow. Got a sampling of why the world responded so well to the Supremes back in the mid-1960s.
Don't love.
Supremes actually started in 1961 when she was 17, as was Mary Wilson, who was on this show many years ago, and Mary died a few years ago, and together they, along with Flo Ballard, they were an amazing trio and captured the world by storm, as they should have. And Diana Ross, happy 80th birthday. Now, General Honoré, you're a head of the Green Army. We're going to get to that, but we're talking about dates right now, and one of the dates that now is seared in the memory bank of Americans forevermore is January 6, 2021, and you led the investigation into what happened at the Capitol. News over the weekend that the threat from President Donald Trump to his Vice President Mike Pence was clear and direct. If you defy my effort to overturn the 2020 election by certifying the results, your future in Republican politics is over. Mike, this is a political career killer if you do this, Trump told Pence by phone on the morning of January 6, according to White House valet, who was with the president for much of the day, and told Congress he had overheard the conversation. Now, the actions of the president, of course, are now in the courtroom, is one of four trials against the former president, who is the leading contender now in the 2024 presidential election. You led the investigation. It is a terrible day in American history, but now it is being framed by some, for those who are supportive of those who invaded the Capitol, that they did the right thing, and Donald Trump is all but doing that right now. Your thoughts, General Honoré?
Well, that's a crying damn shame, this misinformation that they're trying to tell American people. Hey, don't believe your lying eyes. You know, you spoke to Speaker Pelosi earlier. That's who I reported to, and she was appointed me to that position. And I think those of us who witnessed 1-6 really know the truth. And this continuation of the big lie, the testament of that is last week or the last week or so when Vice President Vance said he would not vote for Donald Trump. I think that's a true testament. And as much as I may disagree with him on policy, I think Vice President Pence did the right thing that night and helped save the democracy. Because if that had fallen apart, we would have fallen into a constitutional crisis, Jim. So let it sort itself out in the court. And I can't believe the competitiveness of this race going into the fall. And but people got to get out and vote. And that's the thing we got to fight to save our democracy. The way to save it is to vote and vote people in that uphold the Constitution, not those who try to destroy the Constitution.
Well, the election is closer than many people want to believe. We're heading almost into April, so that means in a few days, we'll be 7 months from the finish line. And right now, Donald Trump leads in those swing states that will ultimately determine who wins. And North Carolina has been added to the list. But if Trump wins in North Carolina and in Georgia and in Arizona and in Nevada and carries one of the other three states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, or Wisconsin, he will return to the White House. We already know Louisiana's going for Donald Trump. If he's breathing, he'll carry Louisiana. How do you explain his staying power, General Honoré?
Yeah, I think it's something a lot deeper than the quality of the candidate himself. It's people that want to retain power in the hands of the majority, and they see him as the best path to do that at this time. With all of the indictments in the court, it still is not to sway people, but he's got about a 30% or 40% population, if I believe the numbers, of the Republican Party that's strictly in his camp, and it's more like a cult following than a political following that one would do some analysts. Is this person qualified for the job? That being said, that's why we got to get out and vote. And I do think now that it's down to a two-person vote, those numbers will narrow as we get closer to the election. That's what I'm hoping for. The incumbent always bear the burdens of the problems of the day: Gaza, Ukraine, economy, Haiti. Now that the bridge is collapsed in Baltimore, the incumbent in the White House bear those burdens to fix every problem that's on the board, on their watch, as it should be, to include the economy and the stock market, everything. I think as we get closer, hopefully people will put what they're not happy with aside and understand what's the consequences for another former President Trump's term, based on what he says he's going to do, be a dictator for a day, deploy the army, lock people up, ship people out of the country that have been assured that they can stay here, and all sorts of unusual and strange things. Fire the entire federal bureaucracy, replace them with lawless, and continue to pack the Supreme Court. So people got a choice. And I got relatives that and friends that support Trump. We don't argue about that. We understand and respect each other's difference, but we've got to get the young people out to vote. We got to get the women out to vote. and hopefully we'll save our democracy as a result of that.
Well, Joe Biden, on the record, if you look at the economy, he's done a credible job, but he looks old, he sounds old, and he is old. He acknowledges that. But is that going to be such an impediment, even running against a man who is only slightly younger than he, that he can't win the presidency?
I think that'll have a small effect as we get closer and we stand the two candidates next to each other, unaccused and certified rapist, and against a man that served with honor throughout his career in the government and still served with honor today. Age is an issue.
We will return with General Honoré, and we'll talk about the Green Army as well. 877-217-5757. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. One of our favorite guests, the incomparable General Russell Honoré, is with us. Man who brought Louisiana back from Katrina, and 19 years later, he's in the game at the state capitol. And, of course, he led the investigation into the insurrection of January 6, 2021, as to why the Capitol was invaded and how it can be prevented from happening again. If you get a busy signal, please be patient, but your number is 877-217-5757, and we would encourage our callers to be brief. We have some people waiting in line to talk with General Russell Honoré. Doug on I-10. Doug, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, the general's made a critical point that we can't ignore. At this time next year, we may be living in a fascist dictatorship. And we know that because of what Trump and his supporters and the Heritage Foundation, it's all very open, but it's not getting reported in all the media outlets. It's not a normal election, but they're treating it like it is. This is very serious, so I thank the general for raising that issue so forcefully.
Thank you, Doug. Always good to hear from Doug. And as usual, he has some cogent thoughts, but there are those who believe that those of us who have some concerns about the former president are piling on, that we're treating him differently than we would others. But I must say there's never been anyone like Trump, and I don't think his supporters would disagree with that. And he has done things and said things that would have brought down other people, but through the strength of his personality, his charisma, his following, for whatever reason they follow him, General, he's there and it is real. If the election were today, I would say there's a 90% chance he would win, but the election's 32 weeks from today. What can happen in those 32 weeks? James Carville says Biden will not even debate him. I think that would be a terrible mistake, but your thoughts about what the next 32 weeks could do to change the inertia in this campaign?
Well, that's the drama of election year. Anything can happen in those 32 weeks, as you described. And hopefully it's for the good, and it will help preserve our democracy. But a lot of water is going to pass under the bridge between now and November when this election come around. There could be more wars started than some stop. There are world actions that are taking place, global actions that could affect our elections. There could be disasters, a series of hurricanes that could affect our election. There are a lot of things that could happen. So hopefully for the best, and people get ready and convince their relatives, whoever they're going to vote for, get out and vote and let the majority rule.
Jim in Denham Springs. Hello, Jim. You're on with the general.
Good morning, gentlemen. General Honoré, thank you very much for your service. One day, I truly hope I get to vote for you for something. we do have a problem in this state. I mean, we have a gentleman who actually helped plan the January 6th insurrection, who is now Speaker of the House, and yet we laud him because he's good for the state. And we have a governor who, when he was attorney general, was sending out text messages trying to drum up more people to go to the insurrection. And yet we laud him because somehow he's good for the state. What exactly are we going to do in this state to make it a place that people want to live in? Because you know, we're getting out because this is bad.
Well, Jim, you make some points about the politics that are extremely conservative, but they're also extremely conservative in Texas and in Florida and in Georgia and South Carolina. Those states are they're blossoming. They're getting people despite the politics. So it's more than the politics. And that might be a good way for the general to segue to his passion in life over the last decade or so, and that's leading the Green Army. You made a cogent statement, I thought, on our last visit that we're the third largest energy provider in Louisiana and we're the second poorest state. What's wrong with this picture? And since then, we've had these reports that Louisiana is losing population. Not only in the past, we lost congressional seats because we weren't gaining enough population. We were gaining. We just weren't increasing at the size, at the pace of other states. Now we're actually losing people. What's going on, General?
Well, I think it's a reflection of young people, particularly the educated and skilled, find better opportunities in other states. The opportunity here is to either be in government, by and large, or in the petrochemical industry. And a lot of our young people that are graduating from college or get skilled training are going off to other states. I travel in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. They all have automobile manufacturing companies for skilled workers. We don't have one automobile manufacturing company in Louisiana. We have continued to pay industrial tax exemptions 5 to 10 years to petrochemical industry. And that's the industry that has bedded itself along the Mississippi River. On any given day, 50% of the barges in America are in Louisiana. We've gained no value from that. And now there's talk of the legislature proposing that the oil and gas people pay even less tax. I don't know how they intend to run this state by reducing enough tax on petrochemical and oil and gas production. 41% of our budget that we spend in Louisiana come from the federal government. And there's even those that want to end income tax in Louisiana. I think all this is discouraging to young people, particularly when we look at the quality of our water and the quality of our air. They want to go to better places that have better infrastructure and better schools. Our public schools are underfunded. Much of that has to do with the amount of tax breaks we give the industry that we do have. And our water is questionable. 400 of our 1,250 water systems are at risk because they're not properly managed. Right. And that's one of the bills we're going to support this year, is proper looking at should we consolidate our water systems.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on with the General Honoré.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's an honor to have an audience with you, General. You're a great, great man. Before I get to my question, adding to what you said regarding the industrial tax exemption, Governor Landry signed an executive order where corporations can come to Louisiana, exploit the resources, pollute the environment, and then now they don't have to create so much as a single new job. Senator Kennedy made a mockery of himself yesterday, trying to make a mockery of a gentleman testifying regarding climate change in Alaska. CO2 is an observable, provable, scientific greenhouse gas, and Senator Kennedy embarrassed himself in Louisiana by evidently mocking what this gentleman was testifying to regarding the effects of CO2 in the atmosphere.
General, would you respond, please? Thank you, David.
Yeah, this is atypical of Senator Kennedy. He never lets facts get in the way of his messaging to support the oil and gas industry. Look, the oil and gas industry understand that they're on the clock and they're having an impact. For years and decades, they hired professors at colleges to say, hey, it's no impact, it's all juju. Hey, they've come around and they're being held accountable. They know that they're having an impact on the environment, but Senator Kennedy is still stuck on that message based on the amount of contributions he gets from the oil and gas kit, as well as our new governor. They're hell-bent on supporting oil and gas, even if it's destroy our water, destroy our air, destroy our aquifers. They're hell-bent on supporting the oil and gas industry. Matter of fact, our current governor said his mission is to support the oil and gas industry, not committed to supporting the people of Louisiana, but supporting the oil and gas industry. There's a decision he's making oil and gas will win out over the people, which is a crying damn shame.
Well, some would say the two are not mutually exclusive. Obviously, as the oil and gas industry goes, sometimes Louisiana goes with it, and that's been, some would say, a problem. It certainly it was in yesteryear, and I don't know that a whole lot has changed, but a listener asked that I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about Desiree Lemoyne's visit. She took exception to some of your work with the Green Army, General. Your thoughts?
Well, Desiree is a fellow Ponkapi lady. I was surprised at her assertion that I wasn't well informed as to what the hell I was talking about. But I'll remind Desiree there's a bill in the Senate today by Lambert, 275. Senator Lambert has been coached to present this bill today. We're asking people to show up and say no to that bill because Senator Lambert has been convinced that private air monitoring done like Louisiana Environmental Action Network.
Well, we'll ask about this when we return with the General. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. General Russell Honoré is our guest for a while longer. 877-217-5757. A line is now open, 877-217-5757. And before we go back to the phones, you were talking about, I think it's Senate Bill 275. This involves air monitoring. Now, Desiree Lemoyne, when she made her appearance a few weeks ago, said that these contraptions, if you will, to monitor air quality, that if they're on a fence, they're unreliable, and that they're better off being in the plants operated by the authorities inside those plants. General, your response, and what about the prospects of this bill, which you have fought mightily for several years to no avail?
Yeah, well, we are presenting a study resolution again this year to do air monitoring. Senator Fields is working over a study resolution that we're going to try to get an adjustment to last year on the bill. But the bill on the floor today is 275 by Lambert in the Senate Environment. And that bill has been proposed. It seemed to have words from industry and LDEQ that proposes that the air monitoring that's being done by Louisiana Environmental Action Network, Deep South Center for the South, and a group over in the Calcasieu Parish, which was funded by the EPA, oh, by the way, $500,000 grant to have NGOs do air monitoring, to collect data. The EPA approved those air monitors that are being used in the state of Louisiana, and they're being paid for with a grant from the EPA. For the LDEQ to then say, well, your monitors are not good as our monitors, so people should not pay attention to them, I think it's disingenuous. It's like having a fire detector in your house, and because you put it in, you got to wait till the fire department tell you that there's a fire in your house. That's bullshit. Oh. And information is available to people through technology today. We should be using all the technology to assess the air in Louisiana. That's why Bill 275 is not good. And back to Ms. Lemoyne. Ms. Lemoyne is a well-paid lobbyist. I myself is about volunteer. I get paid nothing. I've lost money leading the Green Army, fighting pollution and seeking pollution for pollution. So I take offense to that fact that some of us may be gaining monetary from participating in the environmental movement. I'm a volunteer, and many retirees like me lead the environmental movement.
Well, she did imply that you were paid by outside interests.
I take no money. I've lost money leading the Green Army.
James and Metairie. James, you're on with General Honoré.
Well, good morning, Jim, and hello, General. It's often said that we live in unusual times. With Donald Trump, we seem to be living in abnormal times. Frank Luntz the other day said if Letitia James starts seizing Trump's assets, his property and whatnot, it will be creating a victimhood scenario, and you are going to elect Donald Trump. Good or bad is good under Donald Trump. It's perverse.
All right. Well, he is successfully, I believe, portraying himself as a victim. The people who think otherwise probably weren't going to vote for him anyway. And I remember it was the late great Larry King who said that if you pile on somebody in America too often, they'll ultimately be a sympathetic figure, and he might be onto something. So these four indictments may have, even though the prosecutors were well thought out in their intentions, they may not have achieved the results as far as destroying Donald Trump that some had hoped. Let's leave it there. 877-217-5757. Hal in Monroe asked about the bill yesterday, Governor. Nearly 2 years after Louisiana launched one of the strictest abortion bans in the nation, legislators killed an effort to let the voters decide whether to do away with the ban and enshrine the right to abortion in the state contribution. This was a measure, this constitution rather, a measure from Representative Amy Freeman of New Orleans. And, you know, it would be, I think, wise in a sensitive issue like this if the people voted. And they voted once before to ban abortion. Sentiment may have changed, but in Louisiana, you would think that maybe it would be a close vote, but it's not going to the vote of the people. Your thoughts, General Honore?
Well, we have two people on the Supreme Court now, and when they asked Comey and I forget the other gentleman's name, whether they would vote on Roe v. Wade, and they said it was settled law. I thought it was settled law. Apparently it's not, and it's going to be on the election this fall. People will have a choice whether they stick with what the Supreme Court say and have it left to the states, or will the federal government bring this up and make it law, depending on the outcome of the federal election. I think this is one of the leading issues in the federal election in the fall. And people will have to get out and vote with their feet and the and move if they want to change what the decision that was reversed by the Supreme Court. People ought to have a right to do what they need to do to take care of themselves. I think the most restrictive, one of the most restrictive laws in the country, if I understand it right, I'm not an expert on this, is in the state of Louisiana. We went ridiculous. We went stupid ridiculous on trying to control abortions, and it's showing up, and it's one of the reasons young people are losing the damn state. That's an attributing factor on why people leave the state.
Patricia in Magnolia Woods. Patricia, you're on with General Honore.
Good morning, General. My question is, I know that this back to chemicals, that I know chemical companies release tens of thousands of toxic waste in the air, and I was wondering if, and they have to report it, I believe, I was wondering if there's a way, easy way to find out what exactly they are putting into the air. Thanks.
Well, that's a very good observation, and that's one of the reasons the EPA funded these grants to allow NGOs to do further testing. Louisiana has about 43 air testing monitors, about the same number as the state of Arkansas. But Louisiana has about 15 times as many chemical plants as Arkansas. So we have not taken air monitoring serious in the state because our LDEQ bowed to the altar of the Exxon flag and the petrochemical industry. That is why we've got these grants to do more to begin air monitoring, to try to gather data that the EPA can use in enforcing the Clean Air Act. But I'm glad you brought that question up. We need to do more air monitoring, and we need to hold the companies accountable. And the EPA has a pretty good idea of what they're putting into the air. But the petrochemical industry get a lot of top cover from the Senate and the House and in the Congress of the United States. So it's not just the state, it's the federal government that also dips its hand on limiting the powers of the EPA to enforce the Clean Air Act. Thank you for your comment, but we've got more work to do. That's why we're trying to kill Bill 275 today.
Bill in Opelousas. Bill, you're on with the general.
Yes, I want to commend the general for showing this country what a patriot represents, for fighting for the truth and getting us back to being the great country that we are. But have y'all ever heard of a recall for Jeff Landry? Because not that many people voted for him, and he's the corruption that's backing Donald Trump.
All right. Well, recalls don't work, never have, and Jeff Landry didn't get many votes, but he did get a win without a runoff, and people choose not to vote as well. And if they're so apathetic they won't vote, they're not likely to be engaged to vote for a recall. But I really find it amusing that these people call and bloviate about Jeff Landry. Well, they had a chance to vote against him if they didn't want him, and yet most people didn't vote. 65% of the state stayed home on October 14th. Where were you? I hope you voted Bill in Opelousas. But, General, what's going on with people just not, I'm going to get a bit profane like you, not giving a damn?
Well, I think much of it is we've lost the power of the two-party system in Louisiana. Over time, our governance, when you look at the legislature, over a third of them are lawyers, and most of them represent the oil and gas business. When you look at the parish government, much of that has to do with the petrochemical industry and the oil and gas industry, and how they have helped gerrymander the parish government, and then they put people in the legislature that's going to come to Louisiana for 3 months out of the year and vote for things that protect the industry. I think that's the big problem in Louisiana. Now, the other thing is voter apathy and people not following the issues that Bouton Roulé needs to stop, and we need to pay the hell attention of what's going on and who we're voting for. And we did not get that this past cycle.
Another listener, Tom, on Bluebonnet asks about this bill we talked about last week. The House voted 60 to 43 to allow people to ride motorcycles at will without helmets. This, according to them, is a freedom issue. Of course, freedom only goes so far. It certainly doesn't go to personal reproductive rights. But as far as motorcycle helmets, in general, we want people to be able to blow and go and take their chances and the state not step in the way. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that is an issue that I don't have full information on, so I'll be reluctant to comment, but I do think safety first. And these rules were put in with good intention by those who put them in. But I don't have an in-depth comment on that, Jim.
877-217-5757. We're going to spend a few more minutes with General Russell Honoré. Then we're slated to hear from one of the remarkable writers in our country, Jennifer Rosner. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. And when we return, we'll have Henry at the Country Club. He's on deck to talk with General Russell Honoré as Marvin Gaye takes us to the break. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with General Russell Honoré. Then it's author Jennifer Rosner. Your number is 877-217-5757. Robin Dow producing. And we go to Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Hello, Henry. You're on with General Honoré.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, General. First of all, I do vote early. I vote often. And I vote by mail in case if someone shoots me on the way to the polls on election day. So I got my vote in. But I got a question. I see where this legislature had a bill before it yesterday to allow gold to be used as currency, I guess in deference to Mr. Jim's friend, the currently dead Congressman Rarick. General, is this crazy or what?
By the way, that was shot down 16-2, but it was supported apparently by the treasurer, John Fleming, who was elected going away last year. But General, it was an unusual move, but didn't go very far. Your thoughts?
You know, I asked the young House member one time, why did you put that bill in? I said, you're too young to have your name on a bill, so stupid. He said, well, I didn't really read it. Somebody asked me to put it in. I didn't really read it. And I assume that's the case here. But I know nothing in depth about the bill. But
that didn't, speaking of that, didn't go anywhere. Go ahead.
Yeah, we are putting a study resolution in on water testing. We don't have confidence in the water and the way water is being tested in Louisiana. particularly with the report that came out of New Orleans where the water testers were at coffee shops as opposed to. So we got a study resolution going in on that. We also have a study resolution going in on why we're using federal dollars to cap oil wells and the companies are still operating.
All right.
And we don't understand why the state of Louisiana did that, and we're doing a study. The other one is to consolidate small water companies inside the parishes so we can have the proper testing and the proper treating of that water and the proper billing and to be able to, those small water companies to be able to pass audit so they're eligible for federal grants.
Okay, we're going to take one final caller for General Honore. I hear some beeping, so apparently somebody else is trying to get the general's attention. Maybe he didn't fasten his seatbelt. I don't know. But Stuart downtown, please be brief. You're on with General Honore.
Jim, General, audience, good morning. General, this is why we implored you to run, but we understand why you didn't want to run for governor. General, what do you think of his concealed carry initiatives, not wanting to feed the children over the summer?
All right. What about concealed carry and the
I think that's a bad idea. I can't imagine people walking in the French Quarter and everybody carrying a pistol underneath their coat after they've been drinking. I just don't understand the logic of that. There's something not right about that. And I mean, even the sheriffs, I think, told the governor this is not a good idea. How do you show up at a spot with all the shootings we got in the state now? This is ridiculous. The good news, you won't be able to carry a gun into a Tiger football stadium, and you can't carry one into the Southern University stadium. And I hope we keep that way. And I just think it's ridiculous to have that many guns on the street. It will not make us safer. It just makes more guns on the street. And how do the police decide who is the good guy when they show up? We're going to regret we ever signed this bill into law in Louisiana.
877-217-5757 is your number. And we segue now to Jennifer Rosner, who is, thank you, General, always a pleasure. Let's talk again soon. And Jennifer Rosner has written prolifically about uncomfortable things. She's a National Jewish Book Award finalist and author of The Yellow Bird Sings, and has a riveting book that is just out based on the stories of children stolen in the wake of World War II. Some of the reviews have been favorable, to say the least. One reads that Rosner's novel reflects personal interviews and in-depth research. She illuminates the complex and opposing political and religious viewpoints, and her heart-wrenching revelations are in Once We Were Home, and they will persist in readers' minds for seasons to come. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
This is a difficult topic, isn't it?
It really is. And it's not even just confined to this one, you know, set of stories I dug up, you know, in the wake of World War II, but it happens over the course of history.
Well, you are a student of history, and this is something that gives a new wrinkle to an old story, and it's one that I think we should never forget. But how did you find such compelling new stories to present to the public at large?
Well, this particular journey began when I was interviewing hidden children of the Holocaust for my novel, The Yellow Bird Sings, and I ended up meeting a woman who worked for what they called she was considered an operative for what they called the Redemption of Jewish Children, which is essentially a mission that, you know, came up right after World War II, where, you know, so many Jews had been killed, but the few children who had survived had been hiding in Christian settings with assumed identities and fake names. And there was a attempt to try to, retrieve them and bring them back to the faith to try to rebuild this population after so much annihilation. And this woman described her work, which was, you know, trying to locate those children and trying to get them. And sometimes, you know, it occurred peaceably with, you know, conversation, and other times it required just grabbing them from the fields or doing anything they could to try to retrieve those children. But then as I looked into the history, it wasn't just that kind of case. There were other kids who were harbored in churches where surviving relatives came to get them, and then the church took them on the run and hid them, and in some cases were considered kidnapping and ended up in jail for that. And then there was a whole set of children who were actually taken in some times from perks and from their mother's arm, from schoolyards, by Nazi soldiers who were trying to rebuild, to try to bolster the German population. And so this was happening all over the place, where children were being taken from one place to another, you know, with some kind of conception of an ideology, you know, that they'd be better off here or there, or they belonged here rather than there. And I was fascinated by it, and then realized that it's actually something that's really been occurring in history in various different ways. And, you know, just most recently with Russian soldiers taking Ukrainian children, something we do and should be aware that we move these children around, and then they spend their lives struggling with how to reroot after these ruptures and how to deal with a sense of identity and place and home.
Well, Meg Clayton, who's a talented writer in her own right, gives you a rave review. Rosner's new novel is about the ways we seek family despite the wounds we carry. The stories of her characters fit beautifully together like nesting boxes, building to become an ode to love in its many forms, a brave and ultimately life-affirming book. Another one says, utterly gorgeous, the lyrical story of lives in the aftermath of war and displacement breaks our hearts and mends them back into a stronger love. Now, you are a historical novelist. This is not something many people have pulled off successfully, but you have. You're dealing with stories that are based on truth. How do you do that? How do you make that compelling without going too far or not far enough?
Thank you. Well, I mean, first I should also mention that in my background is that I am a philosophy professor too. And so when I'm looking at these kinds of stories and looking at the kind of moral complexity and the blurriness, I feel like it's really important to represent that. And I think that, you know, as a novelist, you try to take particular characters, like really individual people, to you know, to tell your story through. And so it's really important that they be their sort of individual idiosyncratic self. And once you relate to this very specific child who's undergoing a particular journey, I think that for me, the balance comes there because, you know, you start seeing the history in, you know, through people's eyes and what they thought at the time and what was guiding them in this journey. And so you're trying to bring compassion to all the sides, even the sides you don't agree with, but you understand that people believe what they're doing, you know, as we do, whether it's right or wrong. You know, so from inside our head, things make sense. Later, you might, in retrospect, regret doing certain things. But at the time, often you believe them. And so bringing that kind of humility to it often helps you stay on track and kind of represent the history well.
The book is Once We Were Home from Jennifer Rosner. Dr. Rosner, by the way, received her PhD from Stanford University, and it's been a pleasure to talk with you. Congratulations on your important work. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Nice to talk with you. See you soon. And as we round the corner and head for home, we open the show by talking about the 80th birthday of the great Diana Ross, born on this date, March 26, 1944, in Detroit, Michigan, the home of Motown. She was founded by Berry Gordy, along with the other members of the Supremes, started at 15 years old, and the Supremes became a group in 1961 when she was all of 17. But I think one of her last works with the Supremes is one Robin has chosen to close our show. And a reminder that we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.
Reach out and touch.